Alan Edge, thank you for coming in and talking to me.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad you'd come. You're just about to start rehearsal for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
At First Stage?
Yes, sir.
First time, not first time working?
No, fourth.
Fourth time, okay.
Yeah, right,
okay,
yeah.
Now, you live here in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And
sure.
you're, do you think of yourself as an actor or as a comedian or?
A performing artist, that's the term I came up with because as time went along, I was directing, then I produced, and then did stand-up comedy. I said, okay, performing artist, that'll just
yeah, that's right.
cover
just,
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you prefer one to the other?
I prefer theater.
Theater, yeah.
I prefer theater. The process in itself is rewarding, and,
yeah.
and in telling the stories like that. I love to hear people laugh, so the stand-up comedy is great, and it's free because I'm just no rehearsal. It's just me and the mic, and
right,
you know. So it's
that's
kinda,
the scariest job in the world. Stand-up comedy,
it is. And I started after I'd been a professional actor in the union and everything for like 15 years, and the first time I did it, I was so scared that I stopped drinking. I mean, literally, I stopped drinking. The fear was so palatable.
See, now doing stand-up has started a lot of people drinking.
Yeah, you know, that's the irony.
And put them over the edge.
And ironically, that then put me in every bar in town.
That's right, yeah. That's where you go to do comedy, right. you go to bars.
Right.
And you stop drinking.
And
well,
there I was.
So you're saving your money.
That was funny.
Now, you've lived in Cleveland.
Yes.
And Chicago.
Right.
And now in Milwaukee. Lived in Milwaukee for 7 years, you tell me?
7 years, uh-huh.
Right. Now, do you think of yourself as an African-American or as a black man or as a person of color? Or
black,
when you check that box, do you check?
Well, I was thinking that, and I mentioned this in my act, that we're rotating again, because it was colored, then it was Negro, then it was black, then it's African American. So we're rotating back to color.
Oh, we're going back to color.
We're going back to color for the next 20 years. And then
I'm glad I had you in because I got to keep up. You know. I don't know what.
Then of course, Negro sounds exotic. Negro. You know, black has just got one syllable. Black.
Yeah.
Kind of falls flat.
Yeah.
Negro.
Negro's
exotic.
Great. There's a lot of pride in Negro,
yeah,
especially when guys like Samuel L. Jackson say it or somebody like you say it.
Yeah, it's kind of exotic. I think I like that one.
Yeah, maybe we'll get back to there.
Yeah.
Do you notice any, I mean, Milwaukee's got this reputation,
mm-hmm.
and it's more than a reputation. There's some, however they measure things like this,
uh-huh.
for being the most segregated city in the United States. Do you notice it as a performing artist?
Well, you know, I saw that in the thing you said that, and I thought, Chicago, see, Milwaukee is taking our stuff. Now, Dr. King, I've been looking at, you know, it's Black History Month, so PBS and everybody's running stuff, and I had some DVDs I was researching just to Dr. King, and, you know, you've heard Dr. King, because when he got hit in the head with a brick, that's right close to the neighborhood that I lived in Chicago,
yeah?
in Gage Park. And he said that it was more racist in Chicago than Alabama and Mississippi. That was our claim to fame. Also, politics. That was Chicago's thing. Dirty politics. That was us. And you people come along.
And now Milwaukee's
you're taking our politics. You're taking our racism. Is anything sacred?
We've been quiet about our corruption for years and years and years. We're just getting out front with it now.
So, but no, it would. But here, you know, it was. I did notice it because my wife grew up here. And she had mentioned it, and I guess because I'm an older guy, and I'm in theater, so I work with all kind of different cultures and things, and I wasn't paying attention, and especially when you receive it from someone that's younger, you figure some old, you know, grizzly old white guy or something like that.
Yeah.
But when somebody's like 20 or 30, and you're just doing your business or trying to do something, you notice this odd behavior or reaction. I'm like, huh? And I'm like, oh, my God, no.
There it is.
It was racism.
I heard about that.
Yeah, I'm like, that's okay. So it kind of snatched the slack out of my chain real quick. And I'm like, okay, let's get back into reality.
That's right. You have to live in the real world.
Yeah.
Well, when you work in a theater, you don't necessarily, because the theater and performing arts all in general are a little bit more liberal or open-minded or flexible or
by
whatever.
The nature of the art itself, because
exactly.
you have to go in and out of so many different characters and
right.
content.
All right, and you have to be accepting and curious about other cultures, as you say. And
also, too, in the theater, and that's one of the things I love about the theater process, is that we're so interdependent upon one another to succeed. You know, it's pretty much us against the world, you know, like on a ship.
Yeah.
So we're so locked into each other's success. I guess the way, like they say in the military, that you're not fighting for America, you're fighting for the guy next to you.
Exactly.
When we're on stage, we're really just trying to help each other succeed, because if one of us fails, we all fail.
Right.
And so you kind of, you don't have time to really focus on those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah. The differences actually become, that's how you work. You find out, see what the differences are, and you fill up those gaps, because you function as a whole. Somehow.
And also, too, I think in the theater process, even through the rehearsal and, oh, sure, tech, you know, 12 hours or whatever, and then the run itself, you get a lot of time to intermingle with one another, and you talk about personal things and families and those kinds of things. So you actually get to see people as people more than some, you know, a stereotypical image.
So it's a bit of an ivory tower, the theater, in terms of the reality of living.
Oh, yeah. And I noticed, I was thinking, you know, after 58 years, you thought you'd see this, but I guess because of the political stuff that's been going on for the last few years. And I think I overheard someone, oh, immigration, they're taking our jobs. And I think, you know, people really just get these bumper sticker, you know, sound bites, and they really don't think. And I thought to myself, immigration, they're taking our jobs. And I thought, hey, they had 4 million slaves. That's 4 million jobs that were taken from poor white people. And then they went and died to keep their unemployment by the thousands.
That's right.
They said, we will
they went
not
to war.
Work.
That's
I'll
right.
die before I take a job. I want 4 million people working for free while I starve. That's what we'll die for. I thought, okay.
Yeah, that's a great perspective.
Yeah, just to show you how people don't think, Dr. King had said, with Jim Crow, he said that... He said that the rich plantation owners, white plantation owners, while they couldn't give the poor white people food to eat, they gave them Jim Crow to eat. So that by them having that false sense of superiority compensated for the fact that they were dirt poor.
Right.
And that they wouldn't cross the street to spit on them if they were on fire, but, you know, they, you know, sent them off to war to fight to keep their riches, you know. And I think that's what people, I think, hopefully will come to realize, that these people really don't. There's certain people that don't care what color you are. They're just trying to get paid.
Right. Yeah. Just trying to get beans to their face.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know.
Well, now, do you think that there is positive movement? Do you think that there is?
I think it's sometimes it looks as if there's one step forward and two steps back.
Yeah, it feels like that.
You know, there seems to be some social progress as far as awareness, but when it comes to boots on the ground, when the powers that be use the same tricks they have been using in terms of having people fight over a bone like hungry dogs, then people will revert back to whatever it takes to survive.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it happened in Chicago with the stockyards, and, you know, when immigrants clashed with people coming from the South and from Ireland and all of that, and they would pit them against each other to keep them working at dirt poor levels and, you know, and that kinds of things. And I think that's still happening, so that the social awareness gets pushed to the back when you're looking for a job and, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. Yeah, the controlling interest perpetuates the same sort of syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
But slowly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually believe that, I mean, the fact that President Obama was elected 4 years ago, and stands a reasonable chance of being elected again, as long as people don't hold too much against him. He's managed to sidestep race as an issue for 4 years, gracefully. So
sure.
I think it might be more of an issue than he's saying or than anybody's acknowledging.
Oh, sure. I think because I just assumed that he would sidestep it because it was expected.
Right.
You know, we have a black president now. He's going to put all the white people in concentration camps. And so to allay their fears.
That's right.
He just doesn't come out and wear dashikis and say black power.
Right.
Because it might freak them out. So.
And also because he's well educated, obviously a very smart guy, and he knows there are other problems, not necessarily more important problems on a personal level to a lot of people of color in this country, but there are more important problems to focus on, and that's it's one of those issues that may be not completely soluble. There may not be a perfect solution, but it's as long as people are talking about it and working on it and having conversations about it, then there will be progress.
Plus, he has an advantage as far as a perspective of being raised by white people. And that's something that seems to get forgotten. His mother's white. He's raised by his white grandmother and his white grandfather.
Right.
He himself is half white, but the black part is, you know, he seems to, you know, upstage all of that, that people can't even see that, well, you know, we want him to be more black. What about his grandparents and his parents? Could you imagine someone asking you to deny your grandparents and deny your heritage as you know, your dad's side or your mom's side? You know, that's who you are. That is part of who you are. That's your DNA as well. So,
right, it's where you came from. You know, that's your history, right? It's
reality. And we're not talking 300 years ago. We're talking about his immediate family.
Right.
So he has that perspective, and he's the president of the United States of America. And as they say, of the whole free world, you know, leader of the whole free world. So that's a lot of ethnicities to be concerned about.
Yeah, he represents all of us. He's got to do that. Yeah. Listen, Alan, thanks a lot for coming in and talking to me.
My pleasure.
Have a great time with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a ball.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
You're welcome.